I never made it with moderation. No, I never understood. All the feeling was all or nothing, and I took everything I could. Can't hold it back, I can't take the tension. I'm trying to be good. What makes I love you in moderation? Well, don't you know?
Chapter 2. Cody had never put much thought into the whole accelerated aging thing. It wasn't something worth considering, not when everyone around him moved through the world at the same pace he did. The long necks and the trainers didn't count to him, much in the same way that the clones never counted for them. There was Boba, but Boba was removed from the rest of the Voda in the same way that Fett himself was. If Cody ever saw him, it was behind a sheet of transparasteel. In any case, Cody hadn't thought about it. Hadn't had much reason to, really. Not until after deployment. Deployment and, well, Obi-Wan. Cody hadn't known what to think of the general. General Kenobi was a passable tactician, a good orator, dignified like no one else Cody had ever met. Cody hadn't managed to catch sight of the man on Geonosis that first full day. Not like Rex had. Cody was too busy trying not to bleed out. But if the rumors were to be believed, General Kenobi was a good fighter, too. It wasn't until their first major battle that Cody looked at him and saw something else. Something beyond just another Nat-born superior officer. Something beyond general and dangerously close to Obi-Wan. They'd been separated for a great deal of the fighting. It didn't make much sense to have both commanding officers in the exact same place. Still doesn't. One lucky hit and the whole battalion is criffed. So there Cody had been, running around the newly secured position like something deranged. Not at all like the collected, composed commander he'd been trained to be. Because his criffing general wasn't answering his damn comm. And no one had seen him since the worst of the fighting had ended. He'd been gunning for the last hastily constructed med tent, boots crunching noisily in the dirt, expecting the worst. He'd found the general, all right, just not at all how Cody had imagined finding him. The man's beige and brown robes were soaked through with red blood. His sleeves were pulled up, bearing bicep, gathering all the way up around the shoulders, and red blood was streaked up to his elbows. The blood looked especially dark in Kenobi's pale skin, as bold as neon signs in the dark. He was straddling an emergency med bed, straddling the trooper on top of the bed, both hands pressing down hard onto an oozing gut wound that Helix was frantically packing with gauze around Kenobi's hands. "You're doing great, punk," Kenobi was saying as he pressed down with all his weight, elbows locked and flushed white visibly. His fascinating orange-red hair was in complete disarray, a huge, sweaty flop of it hanging down into Kenobi's face. "Just keep breathing for me," he said, smiling as if this was all just another day on the job. Punk had barked out a laugh that sounded far wetter than it had any right to. "I'd do a lot more than just that for you, General," he managed. "Ah," Kenobi had mused, and that smile tilted towards flirtatiousness. How it could, under these circumstances, Cody couldn't fathom. "You come by your name honestly, I see." Punk had wheezed out a laugh, only to be interrupted by Helix's harsh demand for a medication Cody couldn't pronounce or recall the name of. Something for clotting, maybe? Something to glue up the hole in Punk's gut. Punk had pulled through, despite the grim odds. He needed a full Duncan Bacta to regrow the chunk of his spleen that had taken an unlucky shard of shrapnel, but the general had made sure he'd gotten it. Cody would later piece the story together from the dozen of disbelieving Voda who'd seen it happen. Kenobi had held Punk together through the tail end of the battle through sheer force of will. He'd calmly delivered post-battle orders to the lieutenants and sergeants around while his hands stifled the rush of blood from Cody's Vod's body. Unwilling to let Punk go, just a shiny then, another unnotable one amongst thousands, not yet the tech expert he'd later become, become because Kenobi had made sure he lived. And that was only the start of it, of the general becoming Obi-Wan, becoming something else entirely. It was the way the Dekoot always fought right there out on the front lines, practically naked without armor, his lightsaber a swinging arc that marked the very first line of their attack and defense. It was the way he would sit with the battle-fatigued men, even the shinies, and offer whatever comfort or solace he could. It was the strange way he was a snob about tea, but would drink the blackest, sluggiest calf by the gallon before he'd even think about laying down for a full 8 hours rest. They talked more, Cody and Obi-Wan, as the war progressed. If there's one thing about war that the Kaminoans and the Kuvayil Dar never prepared the clones for, it was all the space they'd have just to talk. The old adage, hurry up and wait, turned into hurry up and make small talk. They talked about life at the temple and life on the Negotiator and the Bantha shit insane stunts that only Arcs could get into. They talked about the general's former Padawan, Anakin. Although Cody refused to think of him as anything other than Skywalker, given that he's also a general, and how Anakin had been giving him premature grays since the very first day of his knighting. Eventually, Cody even talked about Rex and admitted much of the same. Slowly, Cody's general became human. He went from something alien to approach with caution to someone who had stupid, frivolous opinions about tea and persistently chilly hands and feet. He became someone who had an annoying, reckless little brother who they worried about relentlessly and someone who held good men's hands while they died, someone who remembered their names. After the general stumbled away from their first tangle with Grievous, his collarbone fractured, his right wrist shattered, concussed to the point where Helix was fretting about real lasting brain damage, Cody had needed to swallow and swallow and choke around something too close to panic for comfort. They'd never find another Jedi general that cared about them this much. He'd calmed Fox, even though they were nowhere close to being on the same time as Coruscant, because Cody always called Fox when the world was caving in around him. Because back when they were fresh out of the growth tube, Fox was the only one who had ever understood, and Fox had answered, because that's what they do, and had said, like Bly wasn't already bad enough, you had to go and fall for yours too. I haven't... Cody had spluttered, furiously red in the privacy of his tiny, too cramped bunk, even though there was no one else there to see. Fox! Of course you have, Osi Covid. But Cody still hadn't believed it. Cody hadn't realized. Not until Ventress. Not until after Ventress, when Cody had spent more time pacing around the med bay than he'd ever spent before, waiting for the general to wake up from whatever force-assisted psychic recovery Osik that the Jedi had insisted on. He hadn't even understood then. Only later, when Rex had shuffled him away from Kenobi's bedside and to his own quarters, and Cody had whispered, more desperate than he knew he could even be, "We could have lost him." The revelation had nearly taken him out at the knees. War doesn't leave time for things like this. It never has. Cody had loved Fox, still does love Fox, fiercely, and they'd still ended up half a galaxy away from each other, fighting different battles entirely, able to connect over comm only once every few weeks if they got lucky. Loving Kenobi? It couldn't be anything. Not least of all because of their positions, but because of who they are. A clone and a Jedi. Cody had never felt the sting of the Vode's accelerated aging until then. Not until he'd realized how desperate Kenobi made him. Not until he realized how utterly gone he was for a man who he could never even admit to wanting, let alone having. For the last year, give or take, Cody has watched his general, watched his men with his general, as they each began to fall for him. This brilliant, larger-than-life man who made them feel precious and unique and known. You are so much of my world, and I am only the smallest fraction of yours. The truth of it, the shitty, awful, fecking truth of the whole ugly matter, is that Cody is a clone. He and many of his brothers love Obi-Wan, this madman who keeps losing pieces of armor like other people lose socks. And for each one of them that loves their general, there are 1,000 others who have loved him first. Clones' lives are so pitifully short in the face of all the living that Obi-Wan and other Natborns have done. There are those who have loved him for so long that Cody and his brothers weren't even a collection of cells in a tube when the loving started. Any claim they have on Obi-Wan ends when the war does. Although they might be his, he was never theirs. But if it is all they can do to keep this brilliant, impossible man alive to see the end of this thing, then so be it. It's a far worthier cause than any other Cody has been told to die for. Chris's team of expert slicers are in charge of phase one of The Plan. Many attempts were made to name The Plan, most of which were spearheaded by Wooly and the 212th Arc Twins. And perpetual pains in Cody's shebs suck and blow. Although many names were pitched, including Operation Cart Camino, Operation Decommission This, Operation Make Fett Roll in His Grave, and Operation Obi-Wan 2.0 The Reckoning, none were unanimously agreed upon, leaving The Plan to be known only as The Plan. Phase one of The Plan will see all external communications brought simultaneously offline. Not only will Tipoca City be on blackout, but the entire planet of Kamino. Obi-Wan is only slightly disturbed to learn that this has long been a common fantasy among the Vode, who are more technologically inclined. Cody, having been Orivod to Tech and batchmate of Fox, has already gotten all the exposure therapy anyone could ever dream of. Still, for others, an explanation is warranted. Well, you know how you sometimes daydream about precisely how you'd go about doing a mutiny, even if you don't really want to do a mutiny and probably never will? It's just like that, Chris explains, casually dismissive of Obi-Wan's and others' somewhat horrified faces as he taps away at something on a pad. No, Vod. No, I do not, Waxer replies as Cody barks out, affronted, Excuse me? He can feel his eyebrows climbing on his own head, helpless to stop them. Tipoca City is one thing, but a mutiny is another. Dee Dee, Punk, and Gidget, all senior members of the 212th Slicing and Communications team, wave off their protesting. It's a thing, Vod, Punk says. Punk is really the most senior out of all of their common tech team. Cody would have given command of the team to Punk if Punk hadn't threatened to desert over it. You give me command of anything more than my own damn self, and I will desert, Cody. Don't try me. I could settle down in the Outer Rim with a gorgeous little arm piece and live out my life in obscurity with 3 Tukas. I could. Don't push me to it, Punk had warned. You promote me and suddenly no one trusts me with the good contraband anymore. I hope you know that this would be the death of me, Cody. But still, Punk is always the first one to jump in and start herding cats when things go to hell. Not leadership quality, his shebs, Cody thinks. But Chris is fantastic, too. The 212th is spoiled for talent. Codes, Chris says. We could really use your Adika on this. Haran knows the kid has spent more time in the long neck systems than anybody. Cody's instinct is sharp. No, absolutely not. He will not bring his Adik anywhere near this. But Haran, The commander portion of him that's still able to compartmentalize knows the truth of what Chris is saying. He knows how good Tech is because Cody is often the one that has to remind Tech not to do anything too obvious that will get him decommissioned, while Cody isn't there to protect him. Punk must read some of this on Cody's face because he gasps, delighted, "We're gonna get to play with Tekika?" Cody levels a stern pointer finger at Punk. "I have decided nothing," he snaps. Punk proceeds to contort himself, draping his body half across the planning table like a Kamini eel, his neon orange hair flopping into his face. "Please, Cody." Obi-Wan laughs. Cody's almost startled by it, really. Obi-Wan allows himself to do that so rarely in front of them. In fact, Cody can't even remember the last time he heard Obi-Wan laugh so genuinely. Maybe he wasn't allowed to before. And, well, if that's the case, Cody might be starting to rethink his positive stance on the Jedi Order's doctrine. Cody shoots him a look that he hopes says, "Sir, please stop encouraging this," without actually moving his lips at all. And trips up again on the gleam of gold that meets his eyes where there should be blue. Chris sighs and says, thoughtful, "It's true, Codes. Kid can run circles around us, and he knows this place better than anyone. We haven't been on planet in, what, well over a year? How many upgrades could a system as big as this go through in that time? A dozen at least." Cody scrubs a hand harshly over his face. He hates it. Hates it like he hasn't hated much else, save for Dooku, Ventress, and Grievous's awful, criffing voice. "Fine, but that means you're watching the rest of the batch, too, and they go nowhere near the fighting. Do you understand me?" "Clear as day, sir," Chris salutes jauntily, hauling Punk upright off the table by the back of his blacks. At least he can keep them close like this. There's probably no safer spot for them than on the negotiator. Cody can even squirrel them away in his bunk and let them get some sleep somewhere where they can actually drop their guard. Though he's under no illusions as to whether or not they will actually sleep if there's action afoot. Now that he's thinking about it, if he were to sequester them away in his quarters, 3/4 of them would end up crawling around the vent in an hour flat. "Waxer, Tripper, Punk, bring them on board as soon as we adjourn. If anyone stops you, say the general authorized them to get a full tour," Cody orders. "Are 3 men really necessary to retrieve 4 boys, Cody?" Obi-Wan asks. He seems more amused by Cody's protectiveness than anything else. Even so, it's a battle to force the defensive bristle back into the box he keeps it in. "Obi-Wan knows about them, and he fell to keep them safe. He wouldn't take them from you for caring." A hand lands, warm and comforting, on Cody's armored shoulder. When he turns, he meets that gold gaze again. The color may be different, but those eyes are the same ones he's loved for months now. Forever, maybe. He can trust him with this. He forces a breath out, steady and measured, just like they were taught to do as cadets. "You don't know the batch, Obi-Wan," he corrects. "They're about as prone to trouble as you and as reckless as Skywalker to boot. If I was really smart, I'd send 4. No other parts of the plan can begin until Chris's team successfully brings everything offline. Only then can they move to the second phase, securing the children. "Sparrow, Rockstar, your team will be securing the nursery and the decant room," Cody says, drawing their attention to the highlighted section of the map. "Risk, Psyche, your team will get the cadets. The biggest challenge there will be getting them to believe you that this is really happening. Think you're up for it?" Psyche and Risk exchange a look. Risk grins and says, "Let me choose the men I take and we'll be just fine." "Done," Cody acquiesces. "Helix and Steady, your team will secure the labs. Keep the long necks there alive. I don't care who they are or what they've done. We need them to show us how to reverse our accelerated aging. Helix, are you good to take point on that?" Helix tilts his head to the side, cracking his neck with a pop, and grins, all full of teeth. Come on, Codes. Like I haven't been working on it since the third month of the war. I'd be offended if you didn't let me. That long? Obi-Wan asks, surprised. Helix shrugs, suddenly much more cowed about it. Helix spends every cycle working tirelessly to pull brothers back from the brink of death, often tragically losing them only to have to get right back up and do it all over again because there are always others. The thought of him surrendering what few moments of rest he's able to eke out to toil away at this thing that had kept Cody up at night? Hells, of course it had. But Helix was willing, intent on it even, and couldn't be talked down from the ledge no matter how much Cody had impressed upon him that it wasn't necessary. Obi-Wan crosses the minuscule distance between himself and Helix. Sir? Helix says, uncertain. He takes Helix's face in his hands, much as he had to with Cody only an hour previous. You, my dear, Obi-Wan says, his voice slow and deliberate in the way that means each word has been carefully, thoughtfully chosen, are perhaps the most selfless person I've ever had the fortune to meet. Helix's breath catches. Cody can't hardly blame him. His has, too. You are brilliant, Helix. Completely brilliant. And I'm sorry that I never noticed how much you sacrifice. Helix's eyes grow wide and he says, abrupt, No, it's not. It's not a sacrifice. Not if it's the Vode. When Helix swallows, Cody can see his throat bob. The whole bridge has gone silent. All 80-something of them held utterly still. And not if it's you. Helix finishes, words soft but somehow loud enough to reverberate around the bridge, like the ringing of a gong. Obi-Wan's eyes shutter closed, his breath escaping him on a rasp, like he's just taken a blow. He doesn't drop his hands, but his head hangs for a moment. When he opens his eyes, they're a brighter gold than before, nearly glowing. I cannot fathom what I've done to deserve the way you feel, he admits. There's so much I should have done differently. So much I should have done sooner. Helix and Cody both open their mouths to protest, but Obi-Wan stops their words with a shake of the head. Helix lifts his own hand to cup Obi-Wan's where it rests on his cheek. You've had so much taken from you all. You deserve the world, and I... A watery inhale. Fragile. Obi-Wan's hands tremble against Helix's skin. I can't give it to you. All I can give you is mine. I hope that you won't resent me for it. Stop, Cody intervenes. He steps forward until his hand can cover the nape of Obi-Wan's neck. The skin is cool under Cody's fingers. It's not as if you had much choice about the war either. Cody, Obi-Wan says, rueful, there's always a choice. And you made the best one available. Punk interjects. His arms are crossed over his chest, his eyes sharp. I won't speak for anyone else, but I sure as Criff don't regret that you're our general. You've only ever tried to do your best by us, sir. The Senate's fuck-ups are not yours to claim. Let the bloated, rich, bigoted assholes who've never once seen a day of combat in their lives own their own shit. Don't you relieve them of that. You... Punk overpowers him in sheer volume alone as he steps in close. The three of them triangulated around Obi-Wan like a strange constellation. Saved my life. That's because of the choices you made. And you'll excuse me for not thinking that's a bad thing. Obi-Wan sways, leaning back into Cody like the words hurt, like he can hardly stand through the barrage. You went back for us, another voice says. Blow and Suck have muscled their way forward amidst the crowd. Blow's hand on Suck's shoulder, and he looks at Obi-Wan like Cody does. Like Helix and Punk do. It was our very first battle, and we were nothing but a liability, Blow continues. But when we got separated, when we lost contact, you came for us, when it would have been better for the mission if you hadn't. You said you could feel us, Suck adds. I'll never forget that. When you pried the door off that Griffin LAAT, you said you felt us and asked if we needed a hand. We thought we were dead, but you... Blow cuts off, unable to finish. You weren't ready to let us go yet. So you'll have to forgive me, too, for not regretting that you are our general, Blow concludes, his jaw set firm. Helix turns his head just enough that his lips graze Obi-Wan's hands. Obi-Wan doesn't startle, but rather he holds deliberately still. Cody can feel him tense every muscle, pressed to his back as he is. Helix captures his wrist, holds it right where it is, and places a kiss against the tender skin of Obi-Wan's palms. It strikes Cody, suddenly, that Obi-Wan is startlingly brave. And it's not just the sort of bravery that allows a man to charge into a hail of blaster fire or allows him to smile in the face of his enemy. No, it's a different sort of bravery entirely to look directly at something you want, but won't allow yourself to have, and to hold yourself on that precipice indefinitely. Cody tucks himself in closer as Punk gathers up Obi-Wan's free hand for a kiss of his own. With his chin on his general's shoulder, Cody closes his eyes and decides to be brave in this way, too. We've always known you loved us, he admits. It's true. Cody thinks it's a simple truth, the kind of thing that Fox could read just by hearing his voice over calm. Even before he knew it, he knew it. Because he saw Obi-Wan hold Punk together under his hand, then saw him 1,000 other times too. Cody's blindness has always been in the choice to close his eyes so he wouldn't have to see what he knew was there. Self-protection. The things we're afraid of, it's all just instinct, habit. We know you couldn't punish us for who we are. Not as a Jedi, and not now. I love all of you, Obi-Wan confesses, desperate, suddenly like a sob. Cody regrets that his current position doesn't allow him to see Obi-Wan's eyes, but he doesn't dare move, even as an admission he never could have anticipated, never would have demanded, turns his knees to putty. I love all of you so dearly, but I can't... Obi-Wan's head turns from Helix to Cody, to Punk, to Wooly, Longshot and Blow and Suck. You don't have to, Cody says, answering a question Obi-Wan would never dare ask. He knows that Obi-Wan would never dare imply that they are in any way to be measured against one another. He's gone to bat for them 100 times against officers, senators, and now other Jedi who do. When Obi-Wan turns to face him, an awkward twist of his neck given their positions, Cody brushes a kiss that's barely more than a peck across his lips. It's not even enough for a taste, but Cody remembers how Obi-Wan tastes from not too long ago. He tastes like the very notion of home. Believe it or not, we do understand the concept of sharing, Boyle drawls from where he's leaning against the map display. All casual confidence and teasing swagger. Waxer, again, delivers a loving smack to his redeur, just upside the head. Helix snorts. It's sort of hard not to when you've got the same face that a million others do. There's a long and heavy pause. Obi-Wan is still against him, holding his breath. It lasts a moment more until, all at once, he relaxes. After, Obi-Wan breathes. After we take Kamino, I'd like to revisit this. He leans forward, sways enough towards Helix that the bastard catches him for a peck of his own, right above the line of his beard. With anyone that wishes to. No more and no less. And when he turns again to catch Cody's eyes, Obi-Wan's eyes are glowing. Cody has seen other Sith up close. Obi-Wan's eyes are not the bloodshot madness of Dooku or Ventress, nor are they cold. They're just his, Obi-Wan's eyes, but they burn 212th gold. Fett had only ever said one thing to them, to any of them directly. Sure, he was content to call them livestock while he watched any number of them get their shebs kicked across the training cells and back, but he didn't talk to them. He only did once, just after the inception of the first command class. Fett was observing their combat training that day with his customary 10 degrees of separation, a looming specter on the observation deck that towered two stories above their heads, even as the Kamini towered over his own. It was always mystifying how Fett could stand next to a long neck and not seem small. It was just something about him. Fett never seemed small, not next to anyone. Cody had gotten pinned down during a demonstration spar with their trainer that day. No matter how he'd thrashed, squirmed, strained with all his power, he was stuck brutally to the mats underneath the weight of solid Beskar. He was pinned completely by the strength of his own damn shame. Thet was watching, dispassionate and distant as always, watching Cody wriggle like a Vod fresh out of the tube. In that moment, he was a creature of spite and nothing more. Cody twisted. He sunk his teeth into the vulnerable flesh of the trainer's arm, just where the protection of a Vambrace ended and the tough weave of Kuta began. And he held on, tasting blood, when the trainer yelped and tried to instinctively wrench away. Fett had laughed. "There's your army right there," he'd said to the Kaminisa. But for once, he'd been looking right at them. "There's your Kota." The blood that had smeared down Cody's face was wet and hot. All he could taste was iron. The trainer had slapped him across the mouth, hard enough that Cody had been bruised for a day or two after. Even that hadn't smarted like Fett's words. "Your Kota," he'd said, and he'd been talking to the Kaminisa. Fett had never once claimed a single one of them as his, not beyond Boba. They were nothing to Fett, nothing at all. In the aftermath, it was Fox who had pounded on the door to Cody's sleeping pod until he was forced to reluctantly open it. Cody will claim, until the end of time, that he only opened his pod because Fox was making such a fucking racket and would not stop until he got what he wanted or got both of them in trouble. But really, he opened it because it was Fox. Fox hadn't picked his name. And unlike Wolf and Pons, he hadn't had his name picked for him by a Vod. Fox had been named by Ro. "You wear your boots in your pod? Disgusting," Fox had said immediately upon becoming visible. "Budge over." And without waiting for a response, he'd clambered in beside him and hit the controls to close the pod. They were just small enough at the time that this was still manageable and not wildly uncomfortable. Fox knew what it was to be singled out by someone whose notice you both craved and loathed. Ro was good at what she did. Ro also pitted Vod against each other in what amounted to death matches for sport. Fett wasn't Ro. Fett was somehow something worse. "You are what you are. What they think you are doesn't change that," Fox had told him, practically crushing Cody down into the sleeping pod, his warm, sweaty hands around Cody's head. Cody would save those words for years, and one day he'd give them to his Adik. "Who are you calling?" Wrecker asks, shoving his way practically into Cody's lap. He's having a better day today, pain-wise, but his eyes are still red and puffy. Cody steadies him and lets him settle with his back against his chest. He dedicates an arm to the cause of trying to hold Wrecker still enough that the kid doesn't end up bruising himself on Cody's armor, while he uses his other to continue queuing up the dozens of encryptions needed to connect to Fox privately. Cody has never been more grateful for his Vod's paranoia. "I'm calling Fox," Cody tells him. While the comm cycles through, he glances up at the other end of the room where Chris and Punk are sat on either side of Tech, all three of them armed with pads and speaking at approximately 20,000 words per minute. Crosshair hovers anxiously behind them while the rest of Chris's team buzzes around the appropriated conference room. Cody resolves to keep an eye on that, Crosshair tends to bite. Hunter has an enormous pair of headphones on, donated by Chris for the cause of keeping Hunter from being overwhelmed by the sound of so many busy Voda, but sits up at the sound of Fox's name. The headphones clearly aren't as effective as they'd hoped. Hunter braces one hand on Cody's shoulder and leans up on his knees in his chair, peering at the comm on the table. Fox, can we say hi? I won't know how much time he has to talk until he jumps on. Once I make sure he knows everything he needs to, and if he has time, yes, Cody negotiates. Hunter settles back down with a very serious face, the face an Adika makes when they're trying to seem adult, and tugs at Wrecker until he acquiesces to Hunter's silent demands. When they're both standing, they make their way over to Crosshair, who's still playing at being Tech's extremely overprotective shadow. Cody, Fox greets as soon as the line connects. His voice is staticky and distorted. Cody adjusts his earpiece. Are you able to talk? No, I just answered for the pleasure of hanging up on you. Fox's eyes have deep circles underneath them, so deep that they look like his lack of sleep has gained a physical form and punched him in both eyes. Yeah, I can talk. You've got 3 minutes. You're alone? Cody clarifies. A pause. Yes, and I just turned on my jammer. What's going on? Any Vod that needs to get off Coruscant, put them on a ship heading to Kamino right now. If you have any troopers on duty in the dome, call them to HQ. Cody, what the shab? Fox, Obi-Wan fell. We're taking Kamino within the next 3 hours. Cody interrupts. Fox's face gives nothing away. Most Vod don't have a passable poker face. They rely on their buckets to hide what they don't want to give away. Usually, the commanders and other officers are better about schooling their expressions because they spend the most time around Natborns and high command, many of which are off-put by the expressionless faces of clone helmets, and ask for their men to go barefaced whenever possible. But no one has anything on Fox's poker face. He's silent for a beat that Cody can't help but count. They're on a schedule. Then, flat, you're serious. He found out about decommissioning, Fox. Most of the Jedi don't know. We're moving to take Kamino now, while most of the Kamini are still out of Tipoca and licking their wounds, and before the 212th gets other orders. As soon as the word gets out, you're going to have a carking riot on Coruscant. Send any Vod that needs to be sent away to us now. Our intent is to establish Kamino as Vod-controlled territory, he explains, and watches Fox's face remain impassive. Can you trust him? He asks, sudden and unflinching. Cody blinks. Vod, can you trust Kenobi? He forgets, sometimes, that the guard doesn't have a Jedi. He forgets that Fox isn't Wolf, practically his general's Adika in all but blood. Nor is he Bly, all but married to Secura. Nor is he Pons, who worships the ground Windu walks on. Fox has never had a Jedi, a good Jedi, to rely on. On Coruscant, it's just the guard and their enemies are everywhere. Their allies are vanishingly sparse. With everything, Fox, Cody answers, his heart pounding away like a drum in his ears. Across the way, Obi-Wan pokes his red-orange head into the room, gold eyes glinting under the light. He passes Punk with a gentle touch to his lower back that has Punk smiling up at him and makes his way through the crowded conference room towards Chris, a question in his eyes. He's wearing his half-armor again, the armor he hasn't worn since the very first months of the war, claiming things like damaging the Jedi image publicly and maneuverability, shoulder bells, rare brace, sharp-pointed cooter, and vambrace. Under the customary layer of his beige Jedi tunics, he's wearing a clone model body glove that climbs his thin, pale neck like a shadow. Wrecker notices Obi-Wan first and bounds over to say thank you for yesterday, at a volume decidedly not suited for indoor spaces. Crosshair follows, glaring. His arms are crossed over his chest and his expression is wary. Cody is watching carefully for the appearance of the blaster pistol Crosshair lifted off of Waxer when he wasn't looking. It doesn't show. Obi-Wan easily sinks into a crouch that brings him eye level with Wrecker and Cross. The smile he offers the boys is easy and real and so very right on his face. Fox sighs, a crackle through the open comm line, a sound light years away. All right, but you better know what you're doing, Codes. If this goes wrong... I know, Cody offers. He does. It isn't enough to capture the buzzing under his skin or the lightning strike tingle down his spine when Obi-Wan turns just enough to meet Cody's eyes across the conference room. He doesn't know how to explain that this will happen, that this will succeed. It feels like destiny. It feels not only right, but just. It feels like the Force is with them. The 212th was stopped on Kamino to accept a dozen new squads. The requisite paperwork having been signed, the proper materials offloaded, and the general having stolen away to enjoy some tea with Master T, there was nothing left for Cody to do but wander the halls. Having seen the wider galaxy, having run for miles in full kit on a planet teeming with droids, having laid on his back in the dirt and the sand, wondering if this is how he died, Kamino felt foreign to him. It had felt like a dream that someone else had a very long time ago. For a harrowing moment at the end of one hall, Cody thought, dizzyingly, that he was watching Fett stride down the corridor, never mind the fact that Fett had been dead since the first battle of Geonosis. For a single, heart-stopping moment, Cody was small again. Cody was out past curfew, Fox at his side, and they were sneaking through the quiet, sterile corridors and trading kisses in the dark. Fett was rounding the bend, and if he were to catch them... Cody! As Cody had blinked, the shape at the end of the hall had resolved. Not into Fett, but into 99. A smile overtook Cody's face without conscious input, and he'd strode forward to meet him for a clasp of arms. "I'm so glad I found you," 99 was saying, all in a rush, his breath coming short and strained like he'd been moving at a pace inadvisable for his lungs. 99 had led Cody to a part of Tipoca City that clones rarely had access to, part of the medical ward, but closer to the labs than to the tubies or to the medbay. There was a room with massive Kaminoan-designed doors that boasted a complex digital lock. As the door swished open, 99 anxiously fiddling with his own hands in front of the keypad, a small figure had come barreling out, brandishing a metal tray like a blunt instrument. Cody's body had taken over, soldier's instincts moving for him, and the tray was wrenched away from the attacker, colliding with the opposite wall with a sharp metal clang. Cody had the assailant pinned under his knee in a heartbeat. It took a ragged moment before the words 99 was shouting filtered through. The assailant was a cadet, wriggling and snarling under Cody's pin like his life depended on it. "Crosshair," 99 had begged. "Stop, please. This is who I was telling you about. This is Cody." Cody couldn't fathom why 99 had been telling cadets about him. Cody couldn't fathom why 99 said his name like it was something that was supposed to matter to this kid. "I don't need help from any reg," Crosshair, the cadet, had snarled. And then he'd bitten Cody, right on the arm that held him down. Right where Cody had bitten that trainer whose name he couldn't recall this many years and campaigns later. The bite that had earned him a name. Cody hauled the scrappy thing, Crosshair, up by his fatigues, which fit him too loosely and were clearly self-hemmed at the corners. He'd cuffed the kid's ear gently for the bite. Because the Adika looked like Rex when Cody had absconded with him, like a cornered animal lashing out in its desperation and equally likely to bite you for your kindness as it would bite you for violence. Crosshair, 99 had explained, had three surviving siblings. They were all experimental units that had been genetically modified for some unknown purpose by the Kaminoans. They were ruled defective, all four of them, and slated for immediate decommissioning. Crosshair had an immune deficiency disorder and a form of albinism that turned his hair shock white and patches of his skin milky pale. Hunter, a shy little thing that clung to 99 and didn't let go, had seizures and migraines. Wrecker had a chronic inability to concentrate or sit still for any period of time and suffered from bouts of debilitating pain as a consequence of his enhanced size and strength. Tech spoke infrequently and only to a trusted few and boasted behavioral and physical tics that he seemed helpless to control. I'd hoped, given Rex, given your position, that you... 99 had trailed off. Cody hadn't needed him to finish. Adika, Cody had said, dropping to his knees until he was closer to Crosshair's height. What are you good at? What are you best at? Crosshair had frowned at him, expression severe. When he'd spoke, his voice was raspy and wet, like he'd recently had a nasty cough. I can shoot. Show me. The Kaminoans never did anything without a reason. Compassion was not part of their equations. Cody knew this. He'd known it since he'd fought tooth and nail against Rex's decommissioning, keeping his Vodika with him at all times until he could convince one of their trainers to take interest enough to take Rex under their wing. The things that mattered to the trainers and the Kaminoans were demonstrable skills and strengths. Nothing more. Not dreams or smiles or laughter, just how good you were. Crosshair had a brilliant, almost supernatural aim. Hunter could pinpoint a malfunctioning practice droid in a set of 200 just by the sound it made. Wrecker could rip Durasteel apart like flimsy plast. Tech did things with computers that Cody couldn't even begin to follow. And the wriggly little Usyk was impossible to keep pinned on a mat. They practically made their cases on their own. Cody just needed to put enough pressure on the long necks to make them listen. I'm not your Vod, Crosshair had hissed at him when all was said and done. The others had hugged Cody, except for Tech, who didn't like hugs all that much, and had opted for a Keldaba instead. But Crosshair had just lingered until 99 had ushered the other boys away. Cody's heart ached. What will it take to prove to you that I am Crosshair? Cross's face, pale from the exertion of the day, his sharp eyes sunken into his skinny face, had crumpled up with anger at the vulnerable tone to Cody's voice, a deeply protective creature scenting weakness in the water. Nobody gives a cark about us but 99. You're not any different from the rest of them, he'd spat. Cody had taken a deep, centering breath. Do you know what the Gai Bal Manda is, Crosshair? No. It's the traditional Mandalorian adoption vows. Crosshair's eyebrows had gone up. We aren't Mandos. We aren't even people. Cody set his bucket on the ground and motioned him closer. We are people. Just because the long necks and the trainers don't recognize it doesn't mean it isn't true. Cody swallowed, words sticking in his throat. You are what you are. What they think you are doesn't change that, Crosshair. And you're right, we aren't Mandalorian. We're Voda, and they aren't the same, but they're similar. The one thing that we've kept as Voda is the Gai Bal Manda. It binds a parent to a child. It means I know your name as my child. I have to leave, Crosshair. My Voda need me. The Republic needs me, too. Cody hit the release on his cuirass and exposed the inner portion of his chest plate, bearing the names scrawled inside to Crosshair's eyes. But my most important people, I keep them with me always. See? Crosshair crept closer, warily, and peered at the names. Cody's batchmates, Rex, Waxer, and Boyle, General Kenobi. Cody took a breath. If you'd like, I could add your names here, and I could say the Gai Bal Manda. It wasn't much, but it was all he could offer. That and his comm code, which 99 had already accepted in case of emergency. You actually mean that? Crosshair had observed, some of the tension leaving his jaw. You want to adopt us and put us there? Only if you'll allow me. And it means you'll come back? For us? It was a small crack in an otherwise well-crafted facade. The child that Crosshair is poking through the rough-hewn edges of a young soldier. Cody had reached out and pulled him close. Crosshair had gone. Stiffly, but he'd gone. I can't promise that I will. The war takes Voda every day. But no matter where I am, I promise that you will always be with me. And if I say the words, you'll always have that part of me too. Tentatively, Crosshair had gripped him back, little fingers worming into the spaces between his plates, seeking neoprene body glove below. Had anyone but 99 ever held Crosshair like this? Or was Crosshair, by virtue of being the Orivod to his batch, the one that did the holding? Cody held on tighter and thought, with everything he had, I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. He never questioned his duty before. Okay, Crosshair whispered. You can say it. And Cody had. After Fox, Cody calls Rex. Rex promises to alert his arcs that are still planetside. Don't die, Cody, he makes him promise. Don't let Skywalker go off the rails until we're done. Cody, are you sure this is the right thing? Rex asks just before signing off. All of the good we're doing for the Republic? We can still do it, Vodika. We can. But this way our Voda at home will be safe, yeah? Cody tries to impress upon Rex, his loyal little brother, how important this really is. Cody was never going to have any issues with Fox. Fox has been wanting to watch the system burn just for the fun of it since the very first month of his deployment on Coruscant. Rex was always going to be the tougher sell. And you're sure Kenobi isn't manipulating you, like Sith stuff? Tech is on Obi-Wan's shoulders in order to reach a bit of wiring on the beacon that will effectively place Kamino on communications blackout. He's smiling. So is Obi-Wan. I'm sure. The plan goes off without a hitch. It isn't until 3 hours past the launch point of the mission that anything goes awry. The tubies are secured, Jango's genetic material is secured, the cadets are secured. All but one exit out of Tipoca City has been secured. All that's left is the green light from medical, General T, and the final transport. Cody and Ghost, minus Helix and Chris, are leading Obi-Wan through winding empty halls of Kamino, racing to lock down the last of the transports out of the city, when Obi-Wan stops them with a single hand outstretched. Something enormous just happened, Obi-Wan admits, turning to Cody with wide gold eyes. Force shit, Cody concludes, half frantic. Obi-Wan turns and says, Longshot, get Helix on the line now. But Helix is already calling them. We need Obi-Wan in the labs ASAP, Commander, Helix is saying before any one of them can even so much as tell him the line is connected. Cody is already redirecting Oryx squad to secure the last transport as they change direction, running for Helix's position. Sit rep, Cody demands. There are biological chips in our fucking heads, Cody, and only Nala Se knows how to deactivate them. They run. There's nothing else to be done but run. There are a million questions to ask, but no time to ask them, and Cody will not stop moving until Obi-Wan does. Obi-Wan is running like the gates of hell itself are at his heels. They run for a lifetime and for no time at all, hearts pounding, blacks going slick with sweat. Master Kenobi, a voice rings out from around the bend. Obi-Wan halts them with a hand just as Master T comes into view, her montrails and markings a splash of color across the white and silvery background of Kamino. There's a certain cautiousness to her voice behind the serenity all Jedi Masters cultivate. Stand down. Her lightsaber is in her hand, unlit. Cody shifts his grip on his blaster and wonders when that will change, when Obi-Wan will cross the indelible line between ally and enemy. His general turned something else stands eerily still, eyes trained on the Jedi Master without a hint of hesitation or fear. Over comms, Cody hears Longshot relay to Helix that there's been a small delay. Helix confirms that he'll hold the position. It's all background noise to what's happening right now, in front of their eyes. Master T, Obi-Wan offers, a very simple greeting for something that feels anything but simple. All at once, Cody is furiously grateful that Ghost is composed of older generation troopers, those who were brought up in the days before the Jedi even knew about them. As if Cody has spoken it into being, a few decorated troopers are approaching Master T from behind, clearly intent to support her in whatever conflict comes next. Cody can only identify Colt by glance. He doesn't know the names of the others. Blasters on stun, boys. Cody breathes over the comms. This is not the way, Master T says to Obi-Wan, her voice gone firm with her conviction. The powers of the dark side are a lie, Obi-Wan. Surrender now while the damage can still be undone. Says who? Obi-Wan replies with a smile. They meet in a clash of lightsabers so severe it's as if a physical shockwave radiates out from the point at which their blades meet. Ghost dives for whatever paltry cover can be found, trading fire with Master T's men. They have their blasters set to stun. Master T's men do not. Cody expects the conflict to be longer than it is. He's so used to longer engagements that a scuffle with a Jedi and three other Voda in a hallway takes him by surprise in its brevity. Master T is a Jedi master, but not one who sees conflict on the regular. Not like Obi-Wan has. It takes him only minutes to disarm her of her lightsaber and hold her still long enough with the Force that Cody's able to stun her. He hits her twice with a stun, unwilling to chance Togruta's stamina and Jedi luck. Colt throws himself into the fight with an enraged roar, only to be deftly interrupted by Obi-Wan, who subdues him with startlingly gentle efficiency. No harm will come to her, Obi-Wan says as he holds Colt, thrashing to the floor. He has to be using the Force. Cody knows from experience that he can easily pin his general in a fair spar. Yet, for all Colt bucks and thrashes, Obi-Wan remains unmoved. Colt barks out a laugh that sounds more like a curse than anything. The two other Voda have already been stunned and are being secured into binders alongside General T. I know what a Sith looks like, Colt spits. I never thought you would be bastard enough to fall, Kenobi. Boyle tears his bucket off his head and stalks forward, his jaw a rigid line. He fell for us, Chakar. There are slave chips in our carking heads. It explodes out of him in a fury of words, a near incomprehensible growl. The Longnecks put slave chips in our brains and spent our whole lives indoctrinating us so we wouldn't fight back because they knew if we ever did, they'd carking lose. Don't you get it? Kenobi did this for us. And meanwhile, what does Master T do? She lets cadets get decommissioned as a matter of carking politics. He punctuates his outburst with two precise stun bolts. Colt will undoubtedly be feeling it tomorrow. Boyle stands there, blaster outstretched, chest heaving as he pants. Waxer steps forward, placing a hand on his Redura's shoulder, only to be roughly shrugged off. We're fucking slaves, Boyle continues, hands shaking. Only slaves get chipped. This whole time, all that osik about protecting the Republic, fuck. He places both hands, including the one holding his blaster over his face, and sinks into a crouch, shaking. Cody has seen men break down before. It still rattles him every time. Obi-Wan sinks to match Boyle's height, barely inches away, but still doesn't touch. It wasn't for nothing, Obi-Wan murmurs, softly, answering the unspoken agony in Boyle's voice. It wasn't for nothing, Boyle. Carefully, Obi-Wan eases Boyle's hands away from his face and lifts his discarded helmet into his line of sight. The little cartoon Twi'lek girl stares at him, smiling. Boyle hisses out a sound through his teeth, something caught between fury and grief. The battles you fought still matter. They will always matter, Obi-Wan says. Regardless of the circumstances of your creation, the people you saved were real. The lives you protected matter. It wasn't for nothing. Their comms crackle to life, breaking the heavy silence. Status? Helix demands. We're coming, Cody says. He meets Obi-Wan's eyes over the bow of Boyle's head. Cody can tell that Obi-Wan doesn't want to leave him, but Boyle is a liability after a breakdown like that. "We'll stay and watch over him," Waxer announces, taking it out of their hands entirely. "Go to Helix." They do. There's an expression that Cody can only describe as numb horror on Helix's face. He's bent over a computer, the blue glow of the screen reflecting in his wet eyes. A few feet behind him, three troopers, including two of Rex's ARCs, the boys from Rishi, Cody notes, have their guns trained on Nala Se, who is bound tightly with binders. Obi-Wan approaches Helix at the console, and Helix flinches backwards, his eyes wide. Obi-Wan stops, frozen with a hand half outstretched, and the lab is silent but for the sound of their breathing. "We're a trap," Helix says, his voice wrecked like he's been screaming for hours. His eyes find Cody's over Obi-Wan's shoulder. "We're a trap for the Jedi. We've been a trap all along." "Helix?" Obi-Wan questions, still reaching out as if he could soothe him. Helix shudders all over and shakes his head, taking another step back. "There's a chip in our heads meant to override our free will upon..." His voice stutters, breaks, and starts again. "Upon voice activation by the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic, we're designed to execute the Jedi." Cody goes cold. There are guardsmen in the temple," Helix croaks. "All of us, any of us, could be made to..." "That's impossible," Obi-Wan breathes. Eyes flashing, he turns to Nala Se. Cody has rarely seen Obi-Wan, or any Jedi, use a mind trick. He saw Obi-Wan do so only once on a diplomatic mission gone sideways. He'd waved his hand in front of the face of a guard, and the guard had simply let them walk past him and into the throne room where the Republic Senator was being held hostage. This is nothing like that. There's no hand wave, just a hard, uncompromising look in Obi-Wan's golden eyes and a curt, sharp, "You will tell me everything about the chips, starting with how to deactivate them and whether or not they can be removed." Nala Se simply opens her mouth and begins talking, as if there was never any other possibility at all. Cody should be shocked. Cody should be disgusted and horrified, and maybe even lost to rage like Boyle. He should be leaning on his Vode like Rex's ARCs are leaning on each other. He should be devastated, scared, angry. He's surprised to find that all that he is relieved. It spreads through his body like a chill, like standing out on the landing platform in the middle of a torrential downpour and getting soaked to the skin. Like the kind of cold that, when you come back inside, the change in temperature tingles across every nerve and penetrates down to your bones. He watches Obi-Wan pull information from Nala Se with nothing but his words and his power, and thinks, suffused through with enormous relief, "I could have killed you." As Helix types Nala Se's codes with shaking hands into the terminal, "I could have killed you and never even known why I did it." As the beacon goes out that renders the chips dead, amplified somehow by something Obi-Wan is doing with the Force that makes sweat glitter at his brow, his lips turn pale with effort. "I could have lost you, and the Adik, and my Voda, and myself, and never known that I lost it at all." "It's done?" he asks, as if from far away. Helix nods. "We'll deal with the aging in the morning," Helix adds. Cody realizes that he has no idea what time it is. It could be morning now. "What do we do with Nala Se?" Longshot asks. "Take her to the negotiator and keep her in a holding cell," Cody orders. The Kaminoan seems to come back to herself all at once. She blinks her enormous, unreadable eyes at Cody.
"Why would I help you?" she asks.
When Obi-Wan turns to her, still panting with the exertion of whatever he'd done to help deactivate the chips of the Vode, even light years away, his eyes are filled with rage. The danger of him rolls over Cody like a wave, pooling liquid arousal at the base of his spine.
You will, Obi-Wan says simply. You will. Nala Se swallows as she's led away by a contingent of 5 armed Vode. Only when she's gone does Cody stride forward and capture Obi-Wan's lips with his own. His heart beats to the drum of relief. I could have lost you with every pulse. Obi-Wan opens under his lips. He tastes of freedom. 1 week after Kamino has been claimed, the Vode begin negotiations with the Jedi Council. In 3 days' time, they will begin negotiations with the Republic Senate. These two entities are now separate once more, and it's all because Fox, the crazy bastard, had decided to make everyone's lives a whole lot easier by being a Shabla Dikut. As soon as the dust had settled and Cody had contacted each clone commander with the news of what they'd done and what they'd uncovered, Fox had apparently armed himself with an old-fashioned slug thrower and walked right into the Supreme Chancellor's office and shot him between the eyes without even pausing to think about it. He didn't sense any danger from me because I wasn't thinking about killing him, Fox had explained, calm, as if blood splatter wasn't still drying on his armor. I was thinking about the hot bath I'm going to take and the bottle of Corellian champagne I'm going to drink. Fox is liaising for Cody on Coruscant, standing straight in front of the Jedi Council while Cody, Obi-Wan, and Helix attend via Holo. Thier told Cody over comm message that he's fairly certain Fox has not cleaned his armor since killing the Supreme Chancellor and is now wearing the man's blood like some grim trophy. Cody isn't sure that's true, but he wouldn't put it past his Sith-murdering Vod either. Shaak Ti is in her council seat, flanked by Colt. When they'd placed an unconscious Master Ti on a transport heading for Coruscant, with a Holo recording explaining everything that had happened, Colt had demanded to go with her. He thought she'd have an easier time believing what had happened if he was there to break it to her. Colt had struggled to believe it himself. It had taken Helix dropping Colt's own removed chip in his hand. This morning, Cody woke up in a Vode pile that featured Obi-Wan at its very center. This morning, Cody edged Obi-Wan until he screamed when he came, held pinned by Helix, Chris, and Punk as Cody rode him to completion. This morning, Cody had showered with his former general and then helped him make pancakes for Hunter, Crosshair, Tech, and Wrecker. Some of the Vode will continue serving as a mercenary army for the Republic, as Dooku and Grievous are brought to heel. Some of them will stay on Kamino, continuing to train and care for the cadets and Tubies and beginning to build a home out of the sterile walls. Some of them will become part of the Jedi Order, helping the Explorer Corps and other Jedi-led relief efforts across the galaxy. Some of them will do other things altogether. Negotiations are still ongoing. They won't conclude for a while yet. Skywalker's wife, Skywalker himself having since left the Order after the news of Obi-Wan's fall, Palpatine's identity, and the chipped Vode, has become a fierce champion for the Vode's rights in the Republic Senate, campaigning tirelessly for back pay, among other things. There are so many pieces that have yet to fall together. But for now, the Vode stand free in front of the Jedi Council, and Cody's Vambrace is on Obi-Wan's arm. Cody reaches out and snags Obi-Wan's hand in his own, just because he can. The meeting be damned. Obi-Wan turns to him, a question in his gold eyes. Nothing, Cody answers down the fledgling force bond that connects their minds. I just love you. Obi-Wan smiles. You're mistaken, my dear, he replies from the deepest part of Cody's soul. That is everything. The end. I'm
music used in this podfic is Florence and the Machine's Moderation. Reader's notes. So this was one of the podfics that I have created for Marianas for ITPE 2023. And I seem to have accidentally stumbled into a theme for a chunk of the Star Wars podfics. And that theme is falling, like Jedi interacting with falling and the clones' responses to it, and sort of different ways that clones loving Jedi and Jedi loving clones, like how they interact with the falling thing. I made this list of things that I wanted to record, and it was great. And then I started recording, and I recorded I'll Catch You When You Fall, which is about Obi-Wan falling and the clones catching him, making sure that he doesn't fall completely. And then I recorded What Friends Do, which is sort of adjacent. I don't think Obi-Wan actually falls or is in danger of falling in that, but it certainly, if you listen to it after and I'll Catch You When You Fall, it certainly feels like a catching in that sense, in the sense that it's used in the first fic. And then I recorded this one where Obi-Wan falls, but specifically for the clones. And it just feels like a really interesting, like, exploration of, like, the theme of Jedi falling and how that works with their interaction with the clones. It's... I did it accidentally, and it's kind of neat. If you enjoyed this podfic and would like to leave feedback for myself or for the author, feel free to do so. You can find this podfic at wherever you found it in the first place. And from that post, you can find a link to the text post and leave feedback for the author there. Thanks for listening.